We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. It is the middle of the summer. Michael and I just had an interesting argument about how crappy Chicago is going to be. At least I think it's going to be crappy, relatively. So I'm ready to tear him apart about something here. So Mr. McNamara, Anthony Davis, is he the best player on the Team USA or the best player ever on Team USA?
FIBA World Cup? No, even FIBA World Cup, it wouldn't qualify. No, he's... I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to watch. It's like an even better version of what he did at Kentucky, where they're not drawing up plays for him. I mean, I saw one play in the first game against, who did they play, New Zealand? I can't even keep it straight.
Are you talking about the preview games or the actual game? Because that was Sweden.
The game before Turkey.
Or was it Finland? God, I don't even know my Scandinavian countries.
Whatever, but there was one play in that game where they got him the ball on a face-up. From about 16 feet out, dribbled right past this guy for a layup. But otherwise, they're not calling up any plays for this guy, just asking him to go out there, hustle, play defense, and a lot of times be the only defense. I mean, look at who he started with the other day. Harden, Irving, Curry, and Fareed. So in some cases, the only defensive guy. And I think what he's doing is absolutely fantastic. And I read an article a couple of weeks ago about how he's not going to break out, but it looks pretty decent to me.
So I'm not going to say he wasn't going to be a phenomenal player, but I was 100% certain, and I'm still pretty certain, there's no way he's going to be like scoring big numbers. I might be meeting my words right now because I think he's averaging 17 and a half per game right now, which does lead the team, but... I don't know, it just seems really fantastical for me to think that he's going to be like the leading scorer on a team that has James Harden and Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving and Derrick Rose is not being offensively aggressive, but those other three guys are. So it just seemed really unlikely to me that he was going to get the ball even enough to be in the conversation of this guy's big impact. Because you don't hear those teams like when Kobe was playing and LeBron was playing and Durant was playing that, oh, you know, Dwight Howard averaged 12 and a half points a game, that he had a breakout season. It was more like, yeah, and Dwight was there. Oh, wait, if they remember to talk about Dwight because there's three other stars on the floor. And I kind of had the same feeling this was going to happen. We'll see. I might be eating my words.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the difference is that I mean, first of all those guys that you name kind of steal shots from each other. I mean, they're so similar in so many ways that they're stealing from each other where there's really nobody. I mean, if he doesn't get in foul trouble, there's nobody that's going to take any minutes from Davis or take that position for him. I mean, you know, DeMarcus Cousins is his backup, and you know, Cousins, I don't know, he doesn't have nearly the impact on the defensive end, and he just looks clumsy on the offensive end. Not really the international game, I guess, doesn't suit him as well. So I could see Davis leading the team. I could see him, you know, leading the team in field goal percentage and maybe being second in scoring when it's all said and done. But there's no clear pecking order amongst those guards, and they all just seem to have, you know, the green light, and Davis is there to clean up. But, mm-hmm. you know, whether he gets those points or not, I just still think that the impact is so good elsewhere, and I'm loving seeing him on the defensive end. I think he's playing the pick and roll a lot better than he has the last year or two.
So I'm going to kind of skip that first game, which was – it was ridiculous how badly they punished the poor Finns. And let's just talk about Turkey. Let's talk Turkey. I wanted to say that for a while. So there was two key reasons I wanted to see the game. One, of course, is Anthony Davis. Can't get enough Anthony Davis. He's amazing. But on the other side, there's Omer Asik playing. And was it me? Or when he was out there, they were playing Team USA to a draw.
I would say in the first quarter and a half, yeah, I mean, he was actually maybe the first half, because when Cousins came in there, he really made Cousins look foolish when Cousins tried to take him into the post and back him in. You know, Asik was defending him with relative ease, I felt, and you know, he was able to keep Anthony Davis off the offensive boards for the most part. I think it was a big part Asik. I also think that there was, you know, a time when Turkey was just hitting its threes at a ridiculous rate, and obviously that cooled down. But
and Asik wasn't in during that part. I will say that. But the best part about this, and I actually went back and rewatched that first quarter just to see what was happening there, because if you remember in that first quarter, the Team USA took maybe three shots within the paint, and even like the one shot Anthony Davis managed to pry away from all the other guards who were jacking crap up was still like a 16-footer. And most of the time, if you watch, it's Asik playing the pick and roll. He would hedge, drop back, and cut them off, and they would either just pass back out to the perimeter for no advantage, or they do a step back jumper, which was exactly what the Turkish team wanted. That was their game plan, was make them take three-pointers off the dribble. And I was enjoying Asik's pick and roll defense so much, which is a really stupid, nerdy basketball thing to say. But I did. It was great.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't wait to see it next year.
I don't think it's anything surprise. Any of us who know about Asik are really learning anything about him that's new here. But it is good to see, you know, with your own eyes rather than looking at old clips or on a stat page and just thinking of Davis and Asik together and what the team could be defensively, and I keep saying more importantly on the boards with them. They, you know, if you just look at the back box score, the thing that kind of worries you about Asik here is he did have six turnovers. A couple of them were like he just gets the offense, or he just gets, let's say, an offensive or defensive rebound and turns around and, you know, gets stripped. I don't know if that should count as a full turnover, but it does. Actually felt like he got fouled on a couple of them with the U.S.'s pressing style, but got stuck under the rim. Like one time got an offensive rebound and just got stuck under the rim and tried to go back up, which, as we know, for you know, guys without much athleticism, when you're stuck under the rim and you're in the trees with three athletic guys, you just got to find a way to get that ball out because it's never going to end well. But I don't think the six turnovers were anything to worry about too much. He seemed to really understand how to set a good screen, which if I'm going to give Anthony Davis criticism, From what I mean, he still kind of sets that soft screen and just barely puts his hip into it. You rarely ever see him give a full screen or something that gets, you know, a guard going to the rim. And that's definitely not a problem for Ashik. And I think you and I have talked about in the past that when Ashik and Davis are both on the court, we expect Ashik to be setting the screens on the guards with Davis popping out or running that baseline. So on the offensive end, you know, if you could look away from the free throw line and you forgive the couple turnovers here or there, I still think that he provides some value on that end. There's no way for a good screen to ever show up in the box score, but it is something tangible that helps a team win.
Yeah, and Ashik was also, I mean, he was the second best rebounder in the league last year by rebound percentage. And in that game, like, Davis could not handle him. I mean, he could box him out here and there and get things, but when they were both scrambling for a rebound, Ashik was just way stronger than him. So I was very ecstatic to see that. But I do have one question for you that's completely not Pelicans related, but watching this game. So you're on record in a lot of different ways in saying that you're not thinking Cleveland is going to be as amazing as everybody else says it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to have Irving or James Harden be the point guard of your team, which one would you take? Because for me, it is a clear, easy answer. Be the point guard of my team, yeah. The guy with the ball in his hands most of the time.
So just offense?
Mm-hmm. Well, even defensively, come on. I mean,
well, no, I think it's two separate answers. I mean, I would probably, if it's just pure offense, I would probably take Harden. On defense, it wouldn't be close. I would take Irving. So putting the two together, I think that Irving is much more willing defender than Harden. I think that gap is bigger than the offensive end. So overall, if I was choosing one of the two, I'd probably take Irving. Wow. But no, if it's just offense with the ball in their hands, I would take Harden.
Irving, like, just watching him in this game drives me nuts. He is 100. He is the product of his situation in the NBA, which is I'm on a team with very little help, and I am the star, and I'm going to dribble this ball 17 different fancy ways and take a shot because I'm pretty good at that. But my teammates, if they're on the floor or not, it doesn't really matter to me. He is an abysmal point guard. He's a excellent shooting guard if you want a guy who's just going to get the ball and attack. If you're replacing Eric Gordon with him, I mean, there's no question about what happens there. He's way better. But the guy doesn't pass the ball. And when he does pass, it's only because he's been cut off. And he just forays to the hoop. I mean, LeBron James is probably going to take him to the woodshed and beat him at some point if he keeps doing that when he plays in Cleveland with him.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing how bad he is at it.
I'm curious. And like that, I've seen Kyrie Irving a couple times live. When he doesn't have the ball, he's even worse. He's like a pouty little, you know, he never moves off the ball. He'll just kind of, he'll pass the ball and he'll just stand at like the top of the arc or off in a corner. Like it's, I'm really curious to see, you know, if the fact that LeBron's there now and he's going to have to learn how to play winning basketball and going to have to accept a different role. I'm really curious to see what happens to him. I guess I was taking that into the equation. Yeah, if I'm just starting off a team from scratch, I don't want Kyrie as my main guy. I guess I was figuring who you were asking, which you didn't, but I just assumed who would I rather put next to LeBron. But either way, yeah, I mean, Harden to me is the superior offensive guy, the one I want the ball in his hands. But, I mean, God, you look at the defense, and for a while there, you know, there was all those stories about how Harden was really putting his all in on the defensive end, and I mean, you could find it. There's several vines out there of James Harden just watching the ball on off the ball defense and just standing around, and the same thing we all saw in that 12-minute James Harden YouTube video. It's it's still absolutely terrible. And I mean, with this many guys on the team, his offense needs to be really good to justify staying on the court, because his defense is as bad as ever.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed in Curry. I thought this was going to be his breakout. I really did think he was going to go nuts.
Yeah, I mean, especially you would think with that three-point line shorter. I mean, that should really be a layup for him. If they were holding this in Madison Square Garden, he'd be going up. What do you think? Let me ask you, before we get back to Davis, just overall in international basketball, there's a couple of different rules, but I think the biggest one as far as impact on the game is that you could touch the ball when it's in the cylinder. Once it hits, it's live. On defense, you could swat it out. On offense, you could tip it in. I don't think we see players use it as much as theoretically if we were playing a video game, we probably would, because it's, you know, it happens so quick. First of all, and second of all, you're just not used to playing those rules. But 8 years from now, do you think the NBA has this rule? And would you personally like to see it this way in the NBA, or do you like it the way it is?
I actually like it the way it is. And I think part of the reason why it works more internationally is you don't have the guys with the athleticism of the NBA big man and FIBA generally. Like Davis, and I cannot think of a time where Davis has actually tried to impact the ball when it's in the cylinder. Cousins has done it a few times offensively because he's thinking, hey, I get points. So he just jumps up there and pushes it down again. But can you imagine that if you had like Fareed or Davis or Dwight Howard and you could have them actually swat the ball out when it's bouncing around up there? I mean, they're going to be just camping there and knocking the ball. I think that would be a pretty bad thing when you got guys who can leap up there that easily and impact shots. And the reason they actually put the rule in place was Wilt Chamberlain was stealing all of the points. Guys would shoot the ball on his team, he'd stand by the basket, jump up and grab it, whether it was going in or not, and dunk it. So if you're allowed to do that, DeMarcus Cousins would never leave the basket, because you know what he's focused on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just almost always in favor of something that takes subjectivity away from NBA refs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think
I can see that.
There's not many things in the NBA that really rile me up, especially now that it seems like guys are more willing to go to medium or small markets. I mean, NBA refs and some of the subjective calls are probably the most maddening things to me when I watch a game. I mean, I still don't understand the block charge call and how they make it or when they make it. And, you know, this is just another one that if you could take away without great penalty, I mean, in theory, it sounds like it would impact a lot of plays a game. But, I mean, just think about it. I mean, okay, first of all, how many shots don't swish in? And then you can't come from under the basket, so you would have to still jump, go over it, be at the right angle. I mean, at the most, I mean, of course you'll have a couple that whirl around, but at the most a ball is on the rim for what, a half second? If you shoot a runner in the lane and it bounces off the backboard, I mean, your reaction would have to be so quick. You got other 250-pound bodies. I don't think it would impact that many. I don't think people would be coming up with new strategies just because of the rule and risk leaving your man just to be by the basket. I think it would impact a few calls a game, but it's just one less thing that I got to worry about the refs screwing up at a huge moment. So.
Well, a better suggestion, in my opinion, would be to just put a camera right over the basket and do what they do with tennis. I mean, they have those cameras that can make the line call for you. They can tell you exactly where the ball hit. So why can't you put a camera right over the basket and you know what's in the cylinder or not? Basically, it says the ball's breaking this much space and somebody touches it. Let the machine make the call.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just one more thing that we gotta we got to stop the game for, slow it down. And like, I would be more in favor. I like FIBA, how there's no live ball timeouts. I would prefer.
I love that.
Yeah, I would prefer the game to be faster than slower. If that's something that you could do where the ref makes a judgment on the spot and then we keep going and then the scorekeeper awards it, you know, obviously if there's 2 minutes left in a quarter, stop the game or whatever, because that'll actually impact strategy. But if the ref makes the call that it's goaltending, then, you know, let them make it. Somebody checks it and then adjust the score accordingly. I mean, we do it with 3-point shots after the fact. So, yeah, I think a rule similar to that I'd be fine with. I mean, we got all this technology. I don't understand why we don't use it more in sports. But, yeah, that's an interesting one where when I saw the roster and I saw Davis, I really thought that would be something that, you know, we could see him use more. I do remember one tip-in that he had that would have been an offensive goaltend in the NBA that, you know, obviously he got here. But, yeah, I think it's been interesting. I've enjoyed watching Davis. Now, do you think that the effects of, I guess, let's say this helps propel Anthony Davis to, you know, yet another level, as if he different than if he would have never been on this team. Do you think that the bigger impact is what he's doing on the court and in practice as far as working on his game and sharpening that? Or do you think it's the mental reps that he's getting and, you know, being in a position of leadership, I guess more intangible and basketball IQ things? What do you think, you know, is the bigger thing for Davis to take away this year that's going to help him into next season?
I think I have three different things. One is, I think he's definitely getting to work on a few things that he didn't have in his arsenal last year. I have seen three different two-dribble drives for him going to the basket. And he made a point last year in saying that right now he's comfortable taking one dribble and doing something. So he's dribbled twice now. Baby steps. Making it. He's getting somewhere. And he gets to do that in the actual competition. That's a good thing. So that's helpful. With being basically designated as one of the untouchables, awesome people on the squad who would never be replaced and is a key cog, and you're looking around the squad and there's all these all-stars and you're pretty much the irreplaceable guy, that's going to help your confidence no end. Though I'm not sure he had too much of a confidence issue. I think he probably was pretty confident already. But actually, my take on the whole, I think he probably had a world of good going to the Olympics 2 years ago with that team and seeing those guys and how they dedicate themselves to the game and how they work and how they do things. I am not at all convinced that this team would give you that at all because of who's not on it anymore. I mean, you look at this team, and if you take the starting five, who amongst that crew do you think works like a dog on their game all the time? Curry, maybe?
I was going to say not on his game, but I would bet he's one of those 500 jump shots a day guys, but not maybe not overall game. Yeah.
Right. Like, I am 100% convinced that if you're sitting there and you're with LeBron and you're with Kobe and you're with Chris Paul and you're with, you know, those guys, they work like dogs on their game and how to do things, and they're dedicated and they're professionals and they've been in the league for a while. But he's on a team with Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. Derrick Rose is probably the most professional of the crew.
Yeah.
Maybe he gets something good, like something rubs off from him. But Andre Drummond, DeMarcus Cousins, like none of these guys are going to give you like, oh, that's how I should comport myself as a basketball person. If anything, Davis is probably one of the shining examples there, which is, that's kind of a sad thing to say about the team. But I don't know how much it's going to help him develop mentally as a professional being around that crew.
I mean, I don't know if you're giving Rudy Gay enough credit. I mean,
I would see Gay doing that.
You got to work hard to step on the court and give a team 2 rebounds, 2 assists, like 4 fouls, and 2 turnovers.
So I could actually see Rudy Gay being like the professional there, but holy God, he is awful. Like, I'm stunned at basically when he and DeMarcus Cousins are out there, the team's awful. I'm shocked. Like, isn't this the 2 key pieces of Sacramento, which is, as we all know, a contender in the Western Conference, right?
The Kings went to his door at 12:01 and begged him to take $19 million.
Yeah.
Please take $19 million from us. And that was just what, a couple weeks after they reached for Nick Stauskas in the draft. So, yeah, I love having the Cowboy Kingdom guys on the podcast. I just don't think we're ever going to have them around playoff time. So,
he's so awful up there, and he's got the impression that he's an amazing dribble drive do it all offensive player, and
now he thinks he's a post up threat since he's up to 4.
Well, he's always been a post up threat. He always would like to get the ball right around 12 feet from the basket and then fade away.
So,
except sucks at it.
So let me ask you this. We've talked about Anthony Davis and how maybe Omer Asik is like the ideal complement for him on the defensive end. And we've raved in the past about how Ryan Anderson and Davis might be the ideal offensive 4 and 5. But Team USA has something going good here with Davis and Fried. I would say at least 2 of their top 3 players so far, if not their top 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fareed would have never been a guy that I would have thought of as a guy who would be a good fit next to Davis.
Oh, I've always loved him.
I've always loved Fareed, but when you're talking about your ideal compliments to Davis, I mean, is this an international ball thing, or do you think that a Fareed-Davis combo could be this terrifying in the NBA game?
Yes, but I think it's exacerbated because it's an international ball thing. Like, we haven't seen them go against a team with real any elite athletes. Like, Turkey was a smart, smart, experienced team that executed their game plan. So that's why they actually made the USA work for it. The previous team, they were just terrible. I mean, there wasn't anybody on that team. And I think I remember, like, the announcer saying they were ranked 39th, but because of some arcane rule about, you know, you could only miss a tournament so many times if you're ranked in a certain rank for over 10 years, they're still in it. But they're supposedly the 39th best team on a tournament of 24 teams. So it's not shocking they got completely torched. But so I think Fareed, because he is an athlete who plays at a really high with a really high motor, he looks even more terrifying than he does. But in the NBA, the guy never stops. And you put him next to Anthony Davis, who maybe doesn't have the motor he does, but is just so freakishly athletic and amazing. They're pretty scary. You can cover a lot of ground with those two guys.
Yeah, I mean,
you'd have to have an open, a full throttle offensive game, though, I think, for them to be really good together.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the offense I worry as much about. I think Fareed is a well below average defensive player. I think he hides it with some hustle, and in these games, he's so much more athletic than the other people that he can make up with it with just hustle and speed and wingspan. But he takes some terrible angles. He's a low IQ defender. He's small. I don't know if it could work. I wouldn't have fears on the offensive end. You know, I think Fareed, especially like if you imagine him on this team, could be a fifth option and just kind of, you know, be like a more skilled Dennis Rodman.
And although he also has some really surprising ability to score around the post. Like, they got him the ball 2 or 3 times where he was in position, and he made all 3 of those shots with nice, balanced jump hooks. Yeah. I was pretty surprised.
Yeah, I think he could do that. I question if he could do it against the length and skill of the average 4 or 5 in the NBA, because I think if him and Davis were playing together, I think at least some teams would put their five on Fareed, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because he would be by the basket, and now you're asking him to do that against fives. So, you know, I think it's interesting to watch Davis with a guy like that. I don't even know, like, if I were to say Kenneth Fareed, if I were to say any other NBA player in the league that's similar, does anybody even, I mean, if Denver locks up Fareed, and let's say Dell Demps sees this and says, oh, I want to put a guy like that next to Davis, is there even anybody in the league that you could say is a poor man's or an 80% of Kenneth Fareed or anything like him? I can't even think of anyone.
I'd have to think about it for a little bit.
You got ambushed.
Yeah. One of the Morris twins reminds me of it as a poor man.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
They just work hard nonstop trying to get to the ball. They're not as effective because they're not as athletic, but I don't know. Terrence Jones?
I see, this is where it gets hard because, I mean, that's just an elite skill for Fareed. Is it's just...
I'm trying to think of anyone who's got that... I can't think of anyone really.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, you might be able to see guys who could come in and give it to you for 15 or 20 minutes, but Fareed somehow looks like he could play that way for 35.
And he's doing it in Denver where there's no oxygen.
The elf.
What, Joakim Noah?
Okay. All right. I
think that's probably my best one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's as springy or wiry, obviously, as Fareed, but yes.
Yeah.
And man, that would be a guy I'd love to see next to Anthony Davis. I mean, talk about all around. I think he might be the best all-around fit. I think Ashik is equal defensive fit, and I think Ryan Anderson might be a better offensive fit next to Davis. But all around, if I could put any player at their peak game in the front court next to Davis, it might be Noah. I can't really think of anyone better.
Gasol would be the only one I would consider. Marc Gasol. Noah or Gasol would be my absolute two choices in that spot.
Yeah. So we've seen a couple of games now. We saw the Turkey game. Now the rest of their group is pretty awful. I think we should expect some blowouts. But I guess moving forward, what other than Davis not getting hurt, which is really the only priority, other than that, what would be two or three things on your wish list that you would like to see Davis do over these next, gosh, it's going to be a quick tournament. I mean, this thing's done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they play five games and six nights in the pool play, which is, it's kind of crazy. What would I like to see Davis do? Honestly, all I want to see Davis do is get a few more opportunities with the ball in his hands. I mean, I don't even want it to be like they're running the game through him or anything. I just want those guards to remember, hey, Anthony Davis is here. So once or twice a quarter, maybe I'll throw the ball to him and see what happens. Because every time Davis has gotten his hands on the ball with more than 3 seconds to think about what he's doing with it, good things have happened. And if he can continue to do that, he just becomes more and more confident in that ability to be the primary attack guy on some plays. He just becomes a more and more unstoppable force out there. And honestly, selfishly, I love to watch Anthony Davis with the ball in his hands. So all those other guards, they can just go away. We'll just do Davis versus everybody so I can enjoy my time
watching. I want to continue to see some things on defense. There's still some stuff that bothers me, like,
okay,
why does he crowd up on guards? Like, I mean, he picks up so many stupid fouls, one because he uses his hands.
Yeah.
I remember going up against Carlos Arroyo, and Arroyo got by him once or twice. And, you know, he was, like, right up on him as if he doesn't know he has a 7-foot wingspan and that if Arroyo does pick up the ball, he'll be able to block the shot. I mean, that bothers me, a little bit. And then still fallen for some of the pump fakes. Again, it's trying to make the spectacular play where you hear, you know, DeMarcus Cousins had said, you know, before the Turkey game that the reason that makes Ashiq so hard to score on is he just uses length, he puts his hands up, and he makes you shoot over him. And, you know, that, I mean, that's a tough shot. Anthony Davis needs to understand how tough it is to shoot over Anthony Davis. You don't have to, you know, I would rather you affect 15 shots and block two than, you know, affect seven, pick up three fouls, and then block three or four. I mean, the block shot is nice, and it could get fast breaks going, and there's a lot of good things about it, but it's just still, it's like he's still not comfortable and doesn't fully know how to use his length. He just goes after something so aggressively or bodies up on guards so aggressively that once he figures out, hey, I could give this guy a little space, and then once they commit to the move, I still have the ability to affect the, you know, change the shot or even block it, and just think he becomes a better defender. That's something I want to see. I'm terrified that, you know, the Gasol brothers are going to, well, maybe not Powell because he owned Powell. But, right. You know, I'm
only in one game. The other game, Powell's okay.
Yeah, I'm terrified that, you know, Spain is just going to get him on some pump fakes, or, you know, the guards are gonna get switched onto him and drive right at him, and he's just going to pick up some stupid fouls in that championship game. So I think that's my big thing is, you know, September 14th in Spain, against Spain for that gold medal, I want to see him play a smart defensive game.
Okay. Now, you're actually playing into my hands here.
Uh-oh.
Because I had an ambush set up for you for this particular podcast. And this is the perfect segue, so thank you. So you know how every year, usually with big men, but with guards too, there are teams that will say, well, we hired such and such a superstar to work with our player to teach them certain things. And you know, Hakeem Olajuwon appears to be like the ubiquitous one for this. Like tons of big men hire Hakeem Olajuwon to come work with them for a week to show all their amazing stuff.
Yet his training really only works with guards. Right. Guards are the only one with feet like him. So it helps with Kobe, helps with LeBron. It ain't helping with Dwight Howard.
Right. And I was sitting there thinking, because I forget now who it was. Somebody brought in Mark Price to help with their three-point shooting and free throws. So I was thinking, Anthony Davis, if I could pick one guy to come to him and like work with him a week to try to impart one piece of knowledge to him, I had picked somebody out. So I was going to talk. So I want them to get Tyson Chandler, who will be hard to do because he's still in the NBA, but get Tyson Chandler to come and sit with Anthony Davis for a week and show him how he plays defense and how he impacts so many different things without ever being a great shot blocker. And I think that would make Anthony Davis just an amazing if he could pick up Tyson Chandler's skill set, he would become an instant defensive player of the year, every year candidate without any question. Because Tyson never had the athleticism of Davis, but he's got incredible timing and ability to recognize angles. But so here's the sabotage I have for you, or the ambush. Take any of our guards. I'll let you pick one. And a superstar you'd like to see them work with. And why? And if you pick Eric Gordon, I'm going to mock you because you don't even want Eric Gordon to be here. So.
No. You know what? And this is really weird. I would pick Drew Holiday, and I would have him work with James Harden.
Okay.
And the
that's cool.
The reason I want him to work with James Harden is because, to me, there is one thing. You know, we have this debate of is Drew Holiday worth these two picks or whatever, and, you know, Holiday, his defense will never be measured. We know it's plus. He's a great, I think, off the dribble and spot up 3-point shooter. Good mid-range guy. He could run an offense. if he gets to the free throw line, the two top 10 picks for Jrue Holiday isn't even a debate anymore. The Pelicans win that trade in a landslide, but he just doesn't get to the free throw line. And I mean, James Harden has a bunch of tricks. You know, he has some pictures on a couple of NBA refs, apparently. You know, he just knows how to do it. So if I could improve any skill set of any of our guards, I would improve Jrue Holiday's ability to get to the free throw line. And Harden's the guy in the game that seems to know how to do it without crazy explosive. Like, Russell Westbrook gets to the line because he's a freaking blur. Mm-hmm. Nobody could get in front of him in time to not foul him. James Harden gets there with craftiness. He gets there by, you know, he cocks that head back whenever he comes close to contact and it looks like a foul and it never is. I mean, if there's one thing I could have any of our guards improved, if Jrue Holiday got to the line, you know, 60% more, twice as much, I don't know, that would be a pipe dream. But I mean, if he got to the line, this would be a guy who would pretty much round out what I...
He'd be an instant superstar.
Yeah. So yeah. So that would be my pick. Did I do good?
Yeah. No, that's a really good one. Though you're not supposed to pick, like, a current player like I did. You're supposed to pick a, you know, a legend.
I mean, who was the man?
Who's the free throw legend? I don't know. Michael Jordan? Which is kind of a cop-out. You can't pick Michael Jordan because he's good at everything.
Just
so.
Got to the line, yeah. I mean, maybe even more than they should have. That wasn't just because of skill, but because of craftiness. I'm trying to think. I mean...
Manu Ginobili, but he's still playing too.
Yeah.
And honestly, I see a lot of Manu's attacking game and James Harden's attacking game.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if James Harden said, I just watched how... Manu would run to the basket and then lift his arms up through people because he knew that he would get a foul if they were slamming into his arms all the time as he shot.
Yeah.
And that's what Harden does.
And Tyreek's similar, too. He just tries to finish too much instead of drawing the foul. But, yeah, I mean, I think either of those things, I mean, Davis with Chandler. And, I mean, I'm curious to see, do you think we've seen Team USA ice the pick and roll or kind of play under it, you know, more than we saw Davis doing that last year with the Pelicans? I mean, I guess it's hard for me to believe that this is Coach K or Thibodeau's philosophy and Monty is just completely against it. And, you know, he's railing against the strategy that's working. I think maybe Monty could say, oh yeah, I see it, but these aren't the type of guys I have in New Orleans, so I'm going to go back to my hard hedging philosophy. I mean, how do you think that's kind of, without being able to be inside Monty's mind, how do you think watching this Team USA's strategy on the pick and roll, which I would say is vastly different than his scheme, how do you think he's processing that, and how do you think that carries over to what we see the Pelicans do this season?
I think he, honestly, if you have the personnel to hedge pick and rolls and force them back towards the middle of the floor, that's actually better to have. It is a better defense. It's just almost impossible to do unless you have intelligent rotation going on behind it, which has been the Pelicans' downfall year after year, is their rotation's garbage. So I think maybe he's just going along the lines with, I have the personnel who should be able to execute up top, and maybe they'll learn to execute down near the basket to the covering schemes you need to do. I think Thibodeau's just, I mean, you said it before, Noah's not the athlete that some of these guys are, and he falls back, and that works extremely well, and because he works so hard and he can defend guys who are getting towards the basket intelligently and not foul them, it works. And I'm hoping that Monty will bow to the fact that I have Omar Asik, who's custom-built for this particular kind of defense and goes with it.
And Davis has been doing beautiful in it as well.
Yeah. And again, this game, like, the thing about pick-and-roll defense, of course, is all about the rotation still. It is embarrassing watching Team USA and some of their rotations to guys on the wings. It is so bad. Yeah. Like, Irving and Harden. I mean, Curry is the best defender of the three of them. How is that possible?
Yeah, because at least he has the intelligence to know where to be. He just can't really impact, you know, affect any shots. But
yeah,
I think it'll be interesting to see.
So make your prediction. Is Monty going to bow to the inevitable, or are we going to see Omer Asik hedging hard on pick and rolls way out past the 3-point line?
I think it'll be a combo. I think, and see, this is, as the other three defenders, this is what's going to be hard because you're always going to have to be in your own head. But I think we see Davis hedge hard, and I think we see Asik do similar to what we saw Ginza, because like a Jin, like Monty obviously switches it up. Like a Ginza never really hedged hard or showed.
Correct.
Yep. So I think, you know,
or he fouled.
But you know, I think it'll be, you know, different for each guy, which is probably the right way to go. I question when you say things like that's the better defensive strategy. When I look at teams like Indiana and Memphis, and they clearly don't do that, they just give up the mid-range shot. And,
right.
You know, they give up the off-the-dribble three because there aren't many Steve Nashes out there. You know, so I don't think there is a universal best defense, but if you tend to look at the better defenses in the league, I mean, the only one for a while, you know, that added a big part of the staple in their defense was Miami when they were, you know, before Dwayne Wade got a little old and, you know.
When they were super athletic at every place, yeah.
I mean, that's the only one. And, like, that's not – I mean, the Pelicans, I would say, have one guy who's considered super athletic for his position. So – I wouldn't say anybody else on the Pelicans is above average athlete at their position. So, I would be really curious to know how, you know, as Monty sits in with those meetings with Thibodeau and Coach K and they really break down what they want to do defensively. Just wonder how much is sinking in and he's buying into some of this stuff, for his own team. So.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a few more things you wanted to chat about before we moved on.
Can we do one?
Or before we close this out.
Can we do one non-basketball just to have a little fun?
Sure. Fire away.
Okay, so I was just thinking about this randomly. There's some new show on or whatever. I watched it once. Legends or something like that. And it's kind of like a Bourne type, you know, Bourne Identity type thing. A little bit of, you know, like the 24 stuff. But I was just wondering, like, how come whenever the FBI or the CIA or whoever it is decides to, like, cross one of their agents, how come it's always the best one? Like, why wouldn't you cross, like, Agent 16 who's, like, not going to have the ability if, say, he finds out and you don't execute the plan to come back and tear down your whole operation? How come it's always he was the best of the best? You know, and now he's coming. Wouldn't that be your strategy if you were a big agency, if you're going to turn?
Put your dumbest agent on the mission you're going to screw up?
Yeah.
Stop it. Because that doesn't make any sense. Like, if you want to mess up a mission, you want to put your best man on it. That's how I operate.
I think it always comes back to haunt them. I don't know. It really bothers me that it's always the best. I'm just waiting for one of those movies to just, you know, who is Radoslav Petrovic? He was one of our, he was our 12th best agent. We sent him out there and set him up and murdered his wife or whatever. Oh, 12th best? Yeah, 12th best. We should be fine then. But no, it's always the best agent. So anyway, that was just...
Well, they also all have to assign a traitor to every single one of their close teams. There's always got to be a traitor.
Yeah. But
every show.
I don't mind that strategy. I just mind... I would never go against my best guy. I mean, if you always got to have a failsafe, and if that goes wrong, now you have the best coming back after you. I don't agree with that strategy. So just something random I want to talk about. Now go on.
We should put you in charge of our agencies.
At least
just to stop that from happening.
At least our film and TV agency. All right, now here it is. This is my other big topic I wanted to bring up, and this is Pelicans related, and I don't know, you know, obviously this is going to be recorded and I can't go back on this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm starting to believe in Eric Gordon this year.
God, I when you sent the list of topics for this, I could What is wrong with you? Eric, you're believing in Eric Gordon again?
What do you mean again?
Well,
I've been against him since
like earlier this offseason. You're like, I believe you could trade Eric Gordon. Like, no, there's nothing there. This is not a guy who's worth it.
See, I think I will say, and now this isn't a high bar I'm setting, but I think that by a significant margin, we will see the best Eric Gordon we have ever seen in New Orleans. The best season we have ever seen for him. By a significant margin, and I think that he's going to be 85% of the Eric Gordon that had his best season in L.A.
Wow.
So talk me out of it. I mean, because I'm getting sucked in every time.
Talk you out of it? Have you seen him play the last 2 years?
Okay, so
I cannot see anything that he has done over the last 2 years that makes me feel like he's suddenly going to be taking smart shots and be a effective defensive player. Nothing. I haven't seen anything. Even if, like, you're going to say it took him an extra year to fix his knee, he just had surgery on his knee twice. Oh no, not buying Eric Gordon.
He's in the best shape that he's ever been in at this time of the year. The healthiest he's ever been.
Does he have 15 pounds of muscle?
I think mentally, he's in the best place he's ever been in New Orleans. I mean, we saw the picture when he got traded here. He obviously wasn't happy how things went down the following summer. I think he is.
I think that was just being stuck with Chris Kaman.
I think he has the incentive because he knows, whether or not he chooses to, he knows that he could be a free agent in 9-10 months.
So, really what you're saying is you think it's a contract year for Eric Gordon, he's going to take advantage of it.
I mean, I don't really care why he's good.
I'm not going to disagree with it. That is the one motivation I could see that he could turn into a more effective basketball player than he was this last season, is that he's extra motivated because it's a contract year. But that's not even good. Like, what if he does come back and he scores 18 points a game on 48% shooting and 40% from downtown? What do you do with Eric Gordon when he opts out?
I'd be so happy to see him go. You're acting like that's a bad scenario.
You want him to opt out? So if he came back and he put up those numbers and he played really hard and the Pelicans made the playoffs and, you know, maybe took a 2 seed to 7 games before they got knocked out, or even miraculously Cinderella'd into the second round, and Eric Gordon was putting up those numbers, is Eric Gordon still gone for you?
Yeah.
You still want him to walk away?
Yeah. That's not the best case scenario, but that's one of the top ones. I'm fine with that. If he goes out and he tricks everybody else, if he has a Trevor Ariza contract year, and now he tricks himself and everybody else into thinking he's a good, because yeah, even if he leaves, you don't think we could replace what, I mean, even if he averages 18 points a game, he ain't going to get us any rebounds. He's not going to get us any assists. 18 points per game, when you look at the weapons the Pelicans have, plus whoever they add with the $15 million that he opens up, those points will be replaced with ease. Drew will take a couple, Tyreek will take a couple, Ryan, Anthony, whatever. I mean, that would be one of the better scenarios for me. So I'd be perfectly fine with that. If he can trick himself in the league into thinking that he's back, I'll still help drive him to the airport, even if he has a great year like that.
don't know. If he has a great year like that, then I would be spending the next 2 months in dread that they're going to announce some big new extension with him for lots of money, and then I would weep and cry.
And if he has a year like that, that means that in February, he's probably having a pretty good year. And if that's the writing on the wall, you know, especially with teams knowing that he could just be a two-month rental, and there, I mean, I think Dell, like I've been saying, Dell could get a Rudy Gay type of package for him where, you know, where he could get a couple of role players and some flexibility. So,
okay. So package is good. The first two words you used in that phrase were not good. So you want Rudy Gay for Eric Gordon?
No, I said a Rudy Gay type of package. So basically what Toronto got for Rudy Gay. No, I do not want Rudy Gay anywhere. I'm saying you get a guy that's, you know, a young guy in a good contract that's better than Salmons, a guy who's, you know, better than Jimmer at the backup too. Like, you get a couple of nice
solid three rotation players
who, you know, you have an option to just get rid of at the end of the summer if you don't want, or you could, you know, pick up whatever. But I mean, back to the original point before, of course, I say something positive about Eric Gordon. We're already talking about trading him. But back to the original point, I mean, look, I'm not sitting here saying I think he's going to be the second best player, and the defense still worries me a lot. I do think that with him being healthier and better shape, I think the fumbles off the knee, I think the off-the-dribble shooting will be a little better. It can't get any worse. But we saw, you know, really good spot-up shooting last year. We saw little spurts where, I mean, he's a guy that maybe even more than Tyreek can go off for 15 and a quarter. Like, it's a little harder for Tyreek because he doesn't have the three-point shot, you know, and he's kind of dependent sometimes on getting into transition. I think, you know, we saw those little spurts from Eric, and I do think it's possible that we see the most games played. And I don't know about the stats because there's going to be so many guys on this team that are going to be sharing the ball, but I think the efficiency, I think we see the most games played and the highest efficiency from Gordon this year since, you know, that year he was really good in LA.
So those two might be true. But I don't. I really don't see. I think he's going to be more marginalized this year than he was last year. I just don't see that. Like, you know, I have a 100% feeling that the coaching staff and the Pelicans organization have a sour taste in their mouth from Eric Gordon in general. And after seeing what Tyreek could do for them when they gave him basically Eric Gordon's job, why on earth would they go back to Eric Gordon at this point?
Because it's the only way to get rid of him.
Yeah, I don't see it. I think I could see them playing him, but I don't see he's not gonna get even the same amount of opportunities he had last year, in my opinion. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to look at a model for what I think would be like close to ideal, probably have to look at his rookie year. His rookie year, he played about 34 minutes, put up 11.5 shots, and scored 16 points a game. Now, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
But even at, let's say I lower that to 15, 11.5 shots, puts up 15 points because, you know, maybe he doesn't get to the line as much. Though again, I think he can't. Like, his free throw attempts took a huge dip last year.
And I didn't get that at all. He got hammered all the time.
Yeah. See, so, I mean, let's say he goes back to getting to the line as much. I mean, even in the year before last, he averaged only 30 minutes a game, took 14 shots. I can't see him getting 14 shots because he got 14 shots plus 5.5 free throws, which basically meant, you know, a couple of those obviously came on shooting attempts. And I don't see him, you know, getting 14 shots, but if you give me anything similar to the rookie year, give me, you know, 32 to 34 minutes, 11 to 11.5 shots, and 15 points. I mean, that rookie year, he didn't really, as usual, give you much in assists or obviously rebounds. Was a good 3-point shooter. I don't think that's beyond reason that he could do that. I would say that Eric Gordon will give the Pelicans close to what he gave the Clippers number wise in his rookie season. And to me, you know, that would be almost ideal. And I don't know. I think that would be fantastic for, I mean, you're talking about a 593 true shooting percentage where really the last 2 years he's been at 52 and 54. If he gets his true shooting percentage up to like 57% or higher, I think that's extremely realistic. And I think that it's something that would really go a long way in helping this team. I think he's going to play more games than he's played with us. And I think he's going to be the most efficient he's ever been.
Okay. Not buying it. Sorry. No.
I know.
No, I'd be surprised if he bakes 30 minutes a game. I would be surprised if he got more than 10 shots a game. I'd be really surprised if he was in double digits on shots per game.
I mean, if Tyreek, and I mean, it's another thing that we could touch on is Demps has, you know, in the Black and Blue podcast, basically said that, you know, Tyreek Evans, he likes him at the small forward position. If Tyreek's going to play a lot of small forward, I mean, who's the backup shooting guard on this team? I think Gordon gets 33 to 35 minutes.
No, we'll see.
You just don't want to be. Come on, be open.
No, it's like, no, I'm not.
You bashed on the guy for years now. I mean, he's healthier.
Nothing. I'm not going to say anything good.
He's healthy.
He needs to earn it. Dang it.
Right.
Earn it. Like you didn't earn your money, Eric.
Well, whatever. That's in the past. I think that
I don't criticize the guy for signing a contract.
He's truly incentivized. I think that, like I said, he's healthier than he's ever been this time of the year, which I guess is kind of the last thing I want to talk to you about is, I mean, getting great reports back on Ryan Anderson. Jrue Holiday seems to be ready. Gordon, like I said, you know, it's said and others have said he's in the best shape he's ever been in the offseason. He's actually in Louisiana practicing with his teammates.
Yeah.
He's not in L.A. So we got all these guys. It looks like, you know, as of right now, everybody's completely healthy. What would you do this? What would you do this preseason? I mean, would you? Yeah, I mean, there's obviously one way you could go. You could get these guys as much time together as possible in real game situation to get ready for the playoffs, or you could play them very few minutes and go, you know, try to guarantee that you at least go into the regular season and a beginning part of the schedule that, you know, after those first four games are really tough, go into that the beginning of the season healthy. What would be your strategy? How would you balance those two things?
I would make absolutely certain that I'm getting my top lineup that I think is going to be my most critical one at the end of games on the floor only 10 minutes, well, for 10 minutes of each preseason game. And otherwise, make sure my injury-prone dudes get lots of rest and that my bench plays, you know, 24 minutes a game from most of them. I'm not playing my guys. Like I said, 10 minutes. Make sure the big guys are out there for 10 minutes together. Make sure you shift that lineup for like maybe another 5 minutes where, you know, maybe your big five at the end of games is Holiday, Gordon, Tyreek, Davis, and Anderson. Then give 5 minutes with Ashik in there doing something. And then let the rest of the guys play. Considering how injury-prone this team has been, just don't even make it a risk. Because last year, starting the season without Ryan Anderson, I mean, we saw what that did to the team. They were running Jason Smith as poor man's Ryan Anderson taking mid-range jump shots And as soon as Ryan Anderson came in, they just moved him out to the three-point line, and suddenly the team started playing better. We don't want that happening. We can't have, like, these slow starts, because the Western Conference is so unforgiving, and this team's confidence doesn't exist. There isn't one. You need to come out with a strong start. You need to do, like, what the Hornets did when Chris Paul and David West and Tyson Chandler, and they all broke out, where, you know, they tore off, I think it was like 14-4 they started off that season. And suddenly people are like, wait a second, that is a good team. And that team's thinking, hey, we are a good team. And even if they don't finish as strongly, at least they've got that, you know, hey, we can be a really good team. We can be dangerous. If they start off the season and it's not a hard schedule and they're down two games and December's comes around, they're under 500 by two games, they're just like, yeah, we were what we were last year.
Hmm.
So let's take your – so let's get your side of that. Are you playing these guys like 25 minutes a game together, 30 minutes a game together in preseason?
See, I don't know. The thing that we're never really privy to is the practices and training camp, you know, and how well those guys, you know, how much they play together and how well they play together there. I think more than anything, the guards, you know, if you're really going to play Drew, Tyreek, and Gordon together a lot, and that's part of the plan, I really think that, you know, they need to get minutes together, because I think that's something that's going to take those guys a while. Like I said, when those three are on the court last year, Drew Holiday was just so incredibly passive. I feel like Tyreek and Gordon started to feel out who they should be in those roles, but those guys, if the plan really is to start those three, finish with those three, I'd like to see them together more. I don't really think you need Ashik on the court as much. I think, you know, there's similar players in like a Ginsa or guys like, you know, well, maybe not a Ginsa because he could hit the jumper, but, you know, there's similar guys where you just know you're never going to draw up a play for them, but they'll be there to dump it off to. AD, you know, obviously he's going to play well with anybody and make everybody look better. So that's not as necessary, but I really feel like, you know, you got to get these three guards together and getting into some kind of flow. I don't want to see the dribble handoff offense for 12 seconds again next year before they decide to do something with it. I think really learning those three guys, learning how to play off each other and benefit each other is going to be huge this season. So maybe those guys, yeah, I would give more minutes together than I guess other lineups.
Yeah, I can see those three needing to play some time together, and it is always interesting to see the three of them try to figure out how to play and who's going to have the ball in their hands. And I have strong opinions of who it should be and who should be the spot up shooters, but they do have to figure that out. And you know, maybe it'll surprise us. So yeah, I could see those three guys getting a little more time. So I have one final question for you before we wrap this up. Our good buddy Al Farouq Aminu went to Dallas Mavericks. Are you terrified he's going to come back and haunt us?
No, honestly, not at all. I mean, I think Dallas is going to be really interesting this year. They're one of the teams that, like, I think they might be my Golden State Warriors of this year, where a lot of people are really buying in and expecting them to, you know, kind of shoot up in the West. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised by them missing the playoffs. I think they get the eighth seed, but wouldn't be shocked if they miss the playoffs, and I don't expect Aminu to have a huge impact. My favorite thing is just reading, you know, I've read articles on the Pelicans or the Mavs, and when they talk about the Pelicans losing Al Farouq Aminu, they, you know, classify it as a devastating blow, or or, you know, they
because he could rebound.
People talk about him as a plus defender just because they see his Draft Express measurement. But, like, I hate when national people try to act like they ever watched a Pelicans game. I mean, the people on this podcast, you and I, you know, who listen to this podcast, you and I and a couple other people, like, we know the real Pelicans, and it just cracks me. I mean, it cracks me up, all this talk about Anthony Davis breaking out. I'm sorry, didn't he have a 40-20 game in March? Wasn't he?
Right.
You know, it's hilarious to me, and this is what I've been telling people for a while. You get all mad that nobody's on the Pelicans bandwagon or talking good. Well, now everybody is, and it's kind of lame because, you know, they weren't watching. I liked our little bandwagon, what it was. So anyway, long way of saying, no, I do not fear Al-Farouq Aminu at all, and I really don't fear Dallas. I would honestly be surprised if we didn't finish out of Dallas and Memphis this year. I would consider it a bit of a disappointment.
Well, we're going to have to do that kind of conversation with our next podcast, where we make our predictions about teams in the West and who's going to be better and worse. Because, yeah, I mean, Dallas is a team that I could probably sit here and talk to you about 10-15 minutes easy, and I don't know if they're going to be better or worse. I really can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, they have a lot of arguments where I could feel like they'd be better. And, I mean, they switched Jose Calderon for Raymond Felton.
Yeah.
I mean, so you upgrade D'Alembert. I mean, I could just go on for minutes. I can't figure this out. They got Chandler Parsons, but they lost Vince Carter. And, you know,
I think their best case scenario is better than anything they could have accomplished last year. I don't think their best case scenario is going to happen, though. So,
yeah.
But yeah, more stuff to talk about. In the meantime, people keep watching USA basketball. Sadly, the USA gold medal game will probably be early in the morning, or it'll be, I mean, it is on a football Sunday, but I would still, you know, advocate that you guys watch that, even if you don't watch any of the other ones leading up to it. That should be a great game, and it could be a huge moment in Anthony Davis's career if things break a certain way. So I'd advocate that game will be September 14th, a Sunday. So won't have a pod between now and then, but I would beg you guys to all watch that gold medal game.
And if you can't watch it, you always got TiVo and DVR. I think everybody's got that now. So that's what I'll be doing, at least. I'm not. What's that?
Does anybody have TiVo?
I have TiVo.
Oh, really? I feel like we...
Are you going to mock TiVo? Don't mock my TiVo,
I just feel like everybody has cable and they're on DVR. I think we call it TiVo. Sometimes call it TiVoing something. I didn't know anybody still had a TiVo.
I have TiVo.
Of course you do. All right, on that note.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to In the Know. And we'll be back probably after the championship game.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them. We are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.